Hello and welcome to what's been a very exciting week so far and what's going to be a very exciting week in the week to come here on Radio Adelaide, because it's Live Music Fest.
It is.
Aloha, welcome to another week of Left, Right and Centre. We're back on the airwaves once more.
I'm Timothy.
On a Tuesday night. I'm Matteo.
I'm Casey. And having said that it is Live Music Fest, most other shows on the station do get a live band.
But not us.
Not us. Whereas evidently we're not liked very much, so...
Well, that and the fact we didn't really bother to apply.
No. We don't need to apply.
It's midnight.
No one else applied.
Who would put a band through coming in at midnight?
Exactly.
Who would put a band through coming in at 11 p.m? It's a slippery slope, Tim. I think we'll spend the rest of the show bad-mouthing station management.
Bad-mouthing station manager. And Chris, who is not here because...
He's a bit of a jerk.
Yeah, well, he's not here, so it's just the three of us again.
We're not going to bad-mouth station management, because we love station management. I have no issues with them.
Love everyone at Radio Adelaide.
I mean, my friends are having approaches from commercial radio, but I'm committed to community radio, so...
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at this. Later on in the show, we're going to talk about topics like refugees paying for their own accommodation in detention.
We're going to talk about wars as well.
Wars, yeah. And later on, of course, game show and the rapid fire news.
All your favourites, regular favourites. It's been a pretty big week. I think all of us have some personal investment in some news that's been doing around.
Some big election news.
Huge.
The mayor of New York City, there's been a tight race for that. The Naked Cowboys just announced that he's dropping out of that race.
Of course, Naked Cowboy is not actually the Naked Cowboy. I'd like to emphasise this to our listeners. He's not actually naked. He busks in Times Square with a cowboy hat and breathes, and he plays acoustic guitar. But the guitar is strategically placed such that he appears naked. Casey.
Yeah. Okay. So he entered the mayoral. I don't know why we went through all that. He entered the mayoral race in July with the slogan.
I think it's mayoral. Is it?
I don't really care. Nobody's done more with less.
Don't disturb Casey.
He had the slogan, nobody's done more with less. But he said he's had enough of the red tape that goes with a run.
All the bureaucracy has just put him offside.
You know what the last straw was? The city's Conflict of Interest Board fined him $250 for failing to file a required financial disclosure form.
Well, that's just poor form, I think.
Sounds a little bit like our friend.
By New York City's Conflict of Interest. Yeah. Well, sounds a little bit like...
Our friend Warwick Kappa.
Yeah, in recent Queensland electoral news, Warwick Kappa...
This guy is an order of magnitude more competent than Warwick Kappa. Warwick Kappa failed to put his application in on time. On the day, he would launch his campaign...
Yep.
With bikini-clad women...
Meter maids.
On his left and right...
Yep.
And failed to lodge his paperwork.
Yeah, but so that was quite a day.
The Naked Cowboy has done quite well.
Well, yeah. He was in the race for over a month, about a month and a half. I think it would have posed quite a challenge to Mayor Bloomberg and his millions. You can't imagine he's a particularly poor busker now. He's been doing it for years.
The thing is, though, like he gets fined $250 for not lodging the financial disclosure statement. That seems rather a disproportionate fine for him when Bloomberg, who is, of course, one of the richest men in the United States, would also receive a $250 fine.
Not progressive.
He does say that the only way to be taken seriously is to appear in a suit and tie. That's his kind of closing remark to a campaign that was well fought, but eventually.
And that's one of the best social norms, I think.
Yeah, so that's what's been taking up our minds electorally
in
the past week.
Student radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM, as studious as you are.
Johnny Cash didn't like that he was called Sue by his father. That was a boy named Sue from San Quentin.
Just importantly, Johnny Cash was not actually called Sue as a child.
No,
was a fictional tale.
Well, I'm not sure if his birth name was Johnny Cash either, but certainly wasn't Sue. Anyway, moving on.
I think it was Cash.
Really?
Anyway, big news. Big news.
I hate you guys so much.
Immigration policy is usually something that's reasonably controversial in Australia. Former Prime Minister...
The Honourable, Right Honourable John Howard.
Right Honourable John Howard made some controversial changes. And one of the most controversial, I think, actually, which is, I don't think, a change that he brought in, but certainly one he strengthened, was a policy of requiring... detainees who are, you know, taken into detention because of their unlawful entry into Australia, of requiring them to pay the cost of essentially transporting them from wherever they entered the country to a detention centre, and then paying for their accommodation and paying for them getting them out of the country because they got in illegally.
Which can I say, I didn't actually know that such a law existed.
Yeah, well, before. Today that law has been repealed. It was repealed with the support of the Greens, Nick Xenophon, Steve Fielding, obviously the government, and Liberal Senator Judith Troweth also across the floor. She joined four Liberal members from the House of Representatives who crossed the floor when it passed that. Past the House.
Yeah, including, somewhat surprisingly to me, Dana Vale. I wouldn't have expected she to be the kind of person that would cross the floor on an issue like this.
Mm.
She being the one who said that we Australians are going to abort themselves out of existence and the Muslims will take over the country. I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah,
similar to that.
I don't know whether there's necessarily a correlation between opinions on abortion and those on immigration. Anyway.
Indeed, but I was a little bit surprised.
Yeah. So this is obviously quite a controversial thing. Steve Fielding, who, although he ended up voting for the bill, which is completely beyond me, voiced a number of concerns that I must say I have an awful lot of sympathy for, regarding, you know, these changes.
Well, he thought that they went slightly too far.
He felt that they should be explicitly only be extended to people who are genuinely refugees. So if somebody enters this country, is put in some sort of detention facility, which doesn't actually happen that much now. Mm. It's a last resort really now. But if somebody enters the country unlawfully and is then found to be a genuine refugee, he would believe in forgiving the debt. But otherwise, he, you know, didn't feel that the debt should be forgiven.
He also expressed concerns about the smell of the bill.
Oh, yeah. There's a quote there. He thought the changes stank worse than a fish market. I'm getting my Merds waddled shocking tonight.
Yeah, so that maybe he had concerns just about the paper it was printed on, I guess, when it was delivered to him in his office. So.
Yeah, but I don't know. I would say
really a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to just receiving some smelly paper. But
what do we think about it?
Look, I would probably agree with it. I don't see why, you know, taxpayers. I don't see why myself or anybody as an Australian taxpaying citizen or a taxpayer should have to pay for the detention of somebody who's come to the country unlawfully. Now, obviously in the case of refugees, to charge them for their transportation and detention would be simply mean-spirited. But in the situation where somebody's broken the law and entering this country...
Well, there's an easy way to avoid that. Just don't put them in detention in the first place.
Oh, well, but we don't by and large now, but there are still costs incurred. With somebody entering the country illegally, you've got to transport them from wherever they make,
Taxpayers are always paying money to the things that they never see again. You know, they don't see the money in any form or again. So it's not that, that I really see an issue with that so much as I would suggest, because there is something here about saying that an objective of the original bill was to require former detainees to repay their debt to the Commonwealth, I would instead say that them serving their detention is actually them paying their debt to the Commonwealth as it is.
Hardly.
No, because I would draw the analogy because between that and a prison sentence, where the emphasis should be on rehabilitation, you're paying your debt to society.
Rehabilitation is all fine if you're a citizen of that country, but if the crime you have committed is to illegally enter the country in the first place, they're not paying their debt to society. They're not paying a debt to anybody. They're simply they've come to a country and.
Well, then in that case, what would you say to?
Also, in some cases, they're paying a debt to people smugglers.
And what would you say to the argument that that the ones entering the country illegally are probably those least likely to actually afford any sort of recompensation? They're not going to be able to likely to pay the cost of their detention, if this is the only way that they've been able to get to the country.
And the cost of the detention wasn't exactly cheap from memory. It was quite an expensive bill per day.
Oh, yeah. I'm not deluded enough. I mean, there's a fact here that Chris Evans, the immigration minister, put out that less than 2.5% of the detention debt invoiced for 2004-2005 was actually recovered. But yeah, I don't think that's the point. The provision under the original legislation was that if you come to this country illegally and are deported, you may not get a visa until such time as you have paid off that debt. It is still a punishment, and I think that should be the focus of the system.
Well, no, I certainly think that they reclaimed so little of the money. It was certainly part of the reason that the bill was repealed as it was.
No, I don't see. Look, I don't see recuperation of the money as an important part of this. I think there's two parts. Firstly, recuperation of the money would ideally be a part of it, but there needs to be an additional disincentive for people to,
Well, there's some provision in the repealment here, which as you can tell, I'm fully in support of. I don't think the bill should have been passed in the first place now that I actually know about it. That if someone's claim to being a refugee was found to be legitimate, then they would be compensated in full. Well, okay, but they would still have to pay the cost of their detention in full at some point or another. And a legitimate refugee would almost certainly not actually be able to afford that. So I'm not sure how they would have to pay in the first place to get that money back.
And I know, as I said from the outset, I don't think genuine refugees should have to, but...
But even though they're entering the country illicitly, I mean, they're going to have to wash dishes at their detention centre to pay for their stay.
Oh, well. All right, we're going around in circles, so I'm going to move on with this.
We now return to a man in the queue at the shops with Paul Schaefer.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Hey, you got fresh milk, huh?
yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Oh, you're good too, that's good.
So it looks like you're having a party, are you?
Yeah, we're...
Oh, you're having a party, I mean parties.
We're sort of having a party. It's for my friend's 40th.
Fire, huh? Yeah. You're just having a conversation. I'm just coming in on your conversation.
Here you go. That's $150, thanks.
$150? That's about $150 more than free. More than free.
Here's your change.
Change, yeah. There's your change.
Thank you.
So, you're leaving the store, eh?
Tune in next week for more hilarious japery with Paul Schaefer.
We're all here, on left, right and centre. We're all having fun.
Except Chris. But we are all having fun.
We're all having fun. It's 12:23. We've all answered our phones.
Play the theme thing. It's not really a theme, but okay.
Also, never call me thing.
I was saying play the theme thing.
But okay.
You're not the thing.
It was only ever going to be that.
Anyway, hit the button again.
I'm going to start the segment.
Time
now.
For RFN.
Two Azeri bloggers are facing up to 5 years in prison after posting a video of a donkey giving a news conference on YouTube, the BBC understands. Shortly after the video, featuring not a real donkey, but a man dressed as one, the men were arrested following a scuffle in a restaurant. A lawyer representing the men says the arrests were politically motivated, but authorities insist they are investigating an orthodox criminal case, with a senior advisor to the president saying, people are not arrested in Azerbaijan because of political activity. In the video, believed to be a send-up of government news conferences, which detractors claim are little more than propaganda events, the donkey extols the benefits of life in Azerbaijan and praises the government for its pro-donkey policies. Guys, what? Seriously?
I was writing up this story, and it was one of quite a few that amused me this week. I think my favourite bit was that there appears to be a step missing in between when they set up the news conference of the man in the donkey suit giving the news conference and when they were arrested for punching some guys at a restaurant. I don't really understand the connection there. I don't understand whether they were in the donkey suit when they punched them.
Or whether they punched whoever. Perhaps the assault was just made up by the government to make up a reason for arresting these people.
Oh, perhaps. But no, Tim. No people in Azerbaijan get arrested for their political activity. Everything's above board. It's a society of political freedoms.
A Western Australian man has been charged with stealing a shipping container filled with imported beer to the value of $35,000. The 34-year-old and his accomplice are believed to have loaded the container of Belgian Hoegaarden beer onto a trailer before driving it to his Palmera home. Customs officers and detectives searched the man's home last Wednesday and allegedly found cannabis in addition to the shipping container. He's been charged with theft and drug possession and will face the Perth Magistrates Court. The accomplice is still at large. Guys, I guess this was just one of those ideas that seemed good at the time.
Well, sounds pretty good to me right now, actually. But
no, I just like, I'm not sure if they were ever questioned about it by either police or friends, and assuming they may have been perhaps under the influence of the other thing that was found in their house. Like, how do you explain that giant shipping container full of beer just in your driveway, guys? I don't even know. Last night was kind of a blur. Woke up, there it was in my driveway. Don't even know how I got it. Certainly didn't go down to the docks to get it.
Paris police are dealing with traffic anarchy after the mayors of two feuding suburbs declared the same busy street one way. Only catch is, they declared it one way in opposite directions. Drivers were subject to the chaos and didn't know where the rival systems converged, meaning all traffic was forced down a side road. The confusion followed a decision by the mayor of Levallois to introduce the one-way system to improve traffic flow through his borough. Feeling an overspill into his suburb, the mayor of Clichy, Gilles Catois, sensibly returned the favour. A local prefect acting on behalf of the French state issued a decree ordering the immediate return of two-way traffic to the thoroughfare, accusing Catois of provoking serious disorder. However, he's refusing to budge, saying he would take the matter to court if necessary. Guys, shouldn't these mayors spend more of their time actually, you know, governing rather than entering into petty arguments? Seems like the Naked Cowboy would do a better job than this.
I think that kind of governance is the best kind of governance.
This is just the most singularly French thing I think I've ever heard of. Like, French government actually doing the opposite of what they should be doing, not actually making the lives of their citizens and subjects any easier at all. In fact, making it far more difficult. Just airing their dirty laundry in public.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Letting their feud go on.
Surely these mayors think, you know, if they thought about it for a second, might think it would be a bad idea to have a one-way street going only out of your constituency. I mean, don't you want people to come in?
Yeah, you want people to come in, spend their money.
You know.
Pay their council rates. No.
That makes no sense to me.
I don't think they do the same thing, things the same way in France.
Satirical US news site The Onion has claimed another victim after two Bangladeshi newspapers published an article from the site claiming the moon landings were staged. The Daily Mail Zamin said Neil Armstrong, famously the first man on the moon, had admitted at a news conference that the moon landings had been one giant lie for mankind. Both it and The New Nation, which picked up the story later, failed to realise that The Onion's not in fact a genuine news site. Both papers have since apologised to their readers. The article said that Armstrong had told a news conference that he'd been forced to reconsider every single detail of the monumental journey after watching a few persuasive YouTube videos and reading several blog posts by conspiracy theorists. Guys, you're laughing right now, but I reckon there may be some East Asian equivalent of The Onion that all Bangladeshi newspapers know not to cite, but we wouldn't.
Well, yeah, but I don't know about you, but I can honestly say I have never gotten my news from a Bangladeshi news source.
Mm. We do get our news from the Times of India quite often. Yeah. Though.
It's kind of an East Asian neighbor.
Times of India is a reliable broadsheet. Okay, it is a staple of
rapid fire news. Anyway,
no, of decent journalism in the subcontinent,
especially when they take most of their stories from Reuters. No, but this is a good story, and I love The Onion actually.
Mm.
Continuing this week's theme of mayors doing what they're not supposed to do, one has resigned after being accused of breaking into women's homes and parading around in their underwear. 58-year-old Ian Stafford, the mayor of Preswell and Knott End in Lancashire, was charged with three counts of burglary after women told police that their bras and knickers had vanished. One woman installed a camera in her bedroom that recorded footage of a semi-naked man rifling through her drawers, putting on her underwear, and then performing a sex act. Sources have told the Daily Telegraph that the police had recovered the haul of missing underwear. The part-time gardener and handyman, as well as former mayor, will appear in court next month. Guys, this kind of makes John Della Bosca seem tame, even boring in comparison, no?
Well, I suppose so. This is much less funny than the mayor story before. I can say I'm disappointed in you guys for bringing this.
Well, it starts off funny, then gets like a little bit blue when you realise that it's actually quite depraved,
sinister.
Really. He's essentially rifling through the underwear drawers of women. And then, I mean, of course, it's a very kind of nondescript description. Sex act.
I wonder.
Yeah. I guess you wonder. No, but I think it's a good thing that he's gone back to just being a handyman and gardener. I'm not sure the whole mayor thing was working out really for him.
Mm. Yeah. He certainly fancies himself as a handyman.
Yeah. Oh, Casey.
Turkey's state broadcasting watchdog, presumably a media board, not actually some sort of animal, have banned the music video for Love, Sex, Magic, a duet between Justin Timberlake and Ciara, for being too explicit. Reuters reports that the Radio and Television Supreme Council has barred Turkish television stations from showing the video because it displays sexual outfits, dancing, and scenes that are contrary to the development of youth and children and morality in general. The video features a skimpily clad Ciara suggestively licking Timberlake's ear and the two performers dancing close together. Ali Karasan, the owner of a station that has aired the video and will not at all with an ulterior motive, has called the ban anachronistic and humiliating for secular Muslim Turkey. Guys, with this video banned, who else is going to bring the sexy back to the people of Turkey?
Well, for those who don't know, that was Justin Timberlake's... I think the man has a lot of flaws, but he cannot be criticised because sexy was gone and he did bring it back.
He did bring it back. That is a signature song, and for that we're all...
He did declare that he'd brought it back. It's not exactly an unbiased source, but who are we to disagree?
I'm pretty sure the sexy is back now.
Mm. But, well, not to Turkey, which is why I think the good people of Turkey are crying out.
See, I don't know. I have been in pubs with televisions that have had that video playing, and I think it's absolutely disgusting. Can I just say, like, there are people...
You can't really take your eyes off it, can you?
There are people licking people's chins in that.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say sucking.
There is definite chin sucking that video clip.
I mean, I would agree with the, what is it, Radio and Television Supreme Council, saying that, you know, one of sexual outfits or dancing is okay, but both. You can't have dancing and dancing in sexual outfits.
Yeah, no, I agree. And no chin sucking.
Now I'm going to expose my... inability to read foreign names in this story. A leading French chess player lost his match in an international tournament in India after turning up drunk and falling asleep after 11 moves. Reuters and the Hindustan Times report that Vladislav Tkachev arrived for his match against Indian Praveen Kumar in such an intoxicated state that he could hardly sit in his chair and soon fell asleep with his head resting on the table. Organisers attempted in vain to rouse the sleeping man. The game was awarded to Kumar on the grounds of Vladislav being unable to complete a move within the stipulated time of 90 minutes. Though warned and reprimanded by organisers, Vladislav, the world 58, board number 58, has been allowed to take part in the remainder of the tournament. Guys, who knew the chess fraternity were this unruly?
Oh, man, I could tell you story after story about crazy chess players, but I won't because they're all boring.
What I love about this is that... He only lost the match because of a technicality.
Oh yeah,
because there clearly exists no precedent in the formalized rules of chess.
Mm.
There's nothing that says you can't be drunk when you play. It's just
fall asleep.
Yeah, it stipulates you have to make a move within 90 minutes. So he could have dozed off for 80 minutes and then quickly made a move, which probably would have lost him the game.
By the way, it's not a one move in 90 minutes. I believe the tournament rules are you have to make 40 moves within the first 90 minutes, and then after that is to 30 moves every hour.
Yeah, you're right, it wasn't interesting.
I'm nerding it up here on my front and centre.
Well, in that case, my source was wrong. I was misquoted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The front and centre, not checking their sources since 2009.
Hey, no, you did the thing. We move on to another story.
A popular European confectionery, enjoyed by one LRC host during his childhood, is causing an uproar after a flood of complaints about its pornographic packaging. Claims have been made that the fruit figures who appear on the Haribo Mauam candies are engaged in sex acts with one another. Simon Simpkins, an English father of two, was buying the candies for his children when he noticed the illustrations of limes, lemons and cherries romping with each other. Simpkins told the Daily Mail that the lemon and lime are locked in what appears to be a carnal encounter. The lime, who I assume to be the gentleman in this coupling, has a particularly lurid expression on his face. I demanded to see the shop manager and, during a heated exchange, my wife became quite distressed and had to sit down in the car park. A spokesman for Haribo said the fun packaging was introduced to German stores in 2002 and that the jovial lime had proved very popular with fans, both young and old. Guys, looking at the picture, I'm not surprised it's very popular with fans, both young and old. Pull yourselves together.
I'm sorry. I think Bizarro probably saw this back in his European days, but his wife became so upset that she had to have a sit down.
In the car park.
Yeah, in the car park.
This man's middle class sensibilities were offended so badly that his wife had to sit down in the car park. She had to slum it with the commoners in the car park because the lemon and the lime were doing it. They're doing it on the packaging. We're going to put that picture up on our blog, by the way.
Oh, indubitably.
It's incredible.
If and when the blog gets updated.
When?
Very least, there'll be just a blog with a picture of that picture.
With the picture of the lemon and lime kind of romping, as it is. It is reasonably suspect, but I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
It's only romping, though. It's not like it's all the way.
Yeah, but how would... You know, they're just citrus. I can't really. Anyway.
What a distasteful little sneaker thing that was. I'm going to end it now.
We're going to turn serious again. We're going to turn it down a notch.
Yeah, hopefully you don't get too emotional. Don't need to have a sit down in the car park or anything.
Yeah. Good. I like it. Recently, the Associated Press in the US, in about 20 newspapers, excuse me, and several more websites, they published a picture of Lance Corporal Joshua Bernard mortally wounded in southern Afghanistan, being attended to by his fellow soldiers. He was hit with an RPG, and his, I think one of his legs was blown off and the other was mangled. He died soon after the picture was taken. He was taken to a military camp, but he died of his injuries. Now, of course, this has prompted a very, very fierce debate about sort of journalistic duty and integrity and about the sanitization of war. The Associated Press, in their own right, has said that they published the photo only after a period of reflection, and that illustrates the bravery and sacrifice of soldiers in Afghanistan. Just a little bit of backstory. The Pentagon, about 4 years ago, they overturned a long-standing ban on media photography of, like, war casualties. That happened in the Iraq War. That's when it was overturned. By contrast, the UK have been reporting on this kind of stuff for years. What was always cited as justification for not releasing the photos was the concerns of the families involved. That's what US authorities have said. Now the reaction has been, there's a quote here from the US Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates. He said that, "I can't imagine the pain and suffering that Lance Corporal Bernard's death has caused this family. Why your organization would purposely deny the family's wishes, knowing full well that it would lead to yet more anguish, is beyond me. Your lack of compassion," says the Associated Press, "and common sense in choosing to put this image of their maimed and stricken child on the front page of multiple American newspapers is appalling." And I'll just finish up by saying that the AP did not actually get permission from the family to show. They showed the family the photo, but they admitted the family didn't want them to show the photo. Yeah, and they went and published it anyway.
Shaking your head. There is absolutely no part of me that could possibly understand anybody disagreeing with Robert Gates on this.
Really?
I think it's up, you know, I cannot possibly fathom how any sort of journal, any sort of human being could, after the express permission of the family saying, "We do not want these images published," how can you go ahead and publish them?
You don't think the journalistic duty extends a bit further to serve some greater good?
What greater good? What greater good could possibly be served?
To illustrate to the American people in very visceral terms precisely what's happening in Afghanistan, precisely how many of their soldiers have been killed.
But you don't have free rein to show... you don't have free rein to show any sort of picture, regardless of permission, of the family. This is you know, a family of a dead soldier. It's appalling. It's the lack of compassion is absolutely appalling. This is, you know... The deaths of soldiers in war is something where extensive compassion and respect has to be shown, and this has no lack of it. You watch reports on, I don't know if anybody here watches the News Hour with Jim Leo. I can, I watch it.
Yeah.
And when there's been casualties, what they do is they show the Marine official military photo, and they have silence over it.
Mm.
That's respectful, and that is respectful not only because of a recognition of what is a sacrifice for the country. Whatever you think of the war, it is still an amazing sacrifice for your country. And not only is it respectful of that, it is also respectful of the families. And I'm absolutely disgusted by this.
I don't think, you know, like, the families, obviously they've been grief-stricken, but, you know, journalistic duty. And I don't think you can say that regardless of whether the war is a just one or not. I think that actually... a U.S. government censoring these images actually precludes people, the American public.
I'm not talking about the U.S. government censoring that. I'm saying two steps back. You go some basic journalistic ethics and human compassion. They should never have been published in the first place.
But it's only about essentially enlightening the American people as to what's actually happening over there, instead of some, you know, media, you know, whitewash.
I tend to agree with what Tim was saying, or the earlier parts of what he was saying, at least. I'm not so sure about the later comments, but my question's about where do you kind of what is the point at which if the family, if the person involved in the story or the photo, if they refuse, if they say, "I don't want you to publish this story or photo," where is the point at which you say, "All right, I'm going to respect their wishes," or the greater good.
Well, I don't know. It may be a grey line, but this is not near it. It may be grey. There may not be a stark line here, but wherever the line is, this is past it. This is a soldier who died an hour after this photo was taken. The family said, "We do not want this published," and they published it anyway. This is the AP, so they get picked up by, you know, as Matteo said, you know, newspapers not only across the United States, across the world. And I don't, you know, I'm not a journalist, I'm afraid. We do our best here on Left, Right and Centre, but I don't know what the journalistic code of ethics is, but I would be shocked and appalled if any sort of journalistic code of ethics approved this conduct, and I would recommend that it should be changed. But I don't even know whether that could be the case.
Like, but you know, does a journalistic code of ethics cover not actually fully and accurately reporting a story?
Yeah, but you're very much entitled to fully, you know, cover the story, and there are plenty of situations where photojournalism has been incredibly effective at doing that, but this crosses a line. I mean, there are situations where, you know, there's the footage of the girl who's been bombed with napalm in Vietnam, the image of the soldier dying is it the Spanish Civil War?
There's recent controversy about whether that photo was actually staged or not. But yeah,
these are iconic images, and these are, you know, ones that what I'm saying is it's quite easy for photojournalism and journalism more broadly to demonstrate, you know, in large part the effects of the war without doing so with such complete disregard for, you know, respect of soldiers and the feelings of their loved ones.
I agree with Samantha Lyon, the director of photography for the AP. She said that we feel it was our journalistic duty to actually show the reality of the war there, however unpleasant and brutal that is.
But she misses the point. It's not about how unpleasant or brutal it is.
No, but
I'm not saying that journalists should self-censor because something is unpleasant or brutal. I'm saying when the family doesn't give you permission to put the photo in, you don't put it in. We can have a separate debate about whether or not particularly brutal images should be put in mass media, and I'm sure I'd have plenty to say about that, but that's not really what's at issue here.
But that's
not the point Gates has made.
But to who is media answerable? The family or, you know, the American public kind of at large? Like, it wasn't the Associated Press that essentially initiated this incursion into Afghanistan. It wasn't them that fired the RPG, you know, on the party of Marines.
Well, congratulations. They're not guilty for killing him.
Yeah, they're guilty if you want to call it that, of showing the photo of his death.
Yeah, but it's not can't be considered in isolation. You know, good on them. They went out and they didn't even seek permission. They notified the family. That's the word they used. They notified the family and said, "We are going to show the image of your dead son, of your son who died an hour afterwards."
Mm. Yeah, well.
You know, whatever you think, be damned.
Well, they made a value judgment somewhere along the line.
Anyway.
Obviously, Tim and I differ about where you draw that line.
You guys have done a really good job covering all bases. I didn't need to say anything there. So, let's go to some comedy to lighten the mood.
Yeah.
Here's a joke.
So, there's this bird, right? And his name is Bob. And he's flying around and he doesn't have any friends. So, he sees a bird sitting on a branch. And so, he goes and sits down next to the bird and he goes, "Hi, I'm Bob." And the bird screams in his face and then punches him and flies away. And Bob's like, "What? What's going on? I don't know. I don't understand what's going on at all." And then so he's confused for a while. And then so he, after a while, just shakes his head and he flies on his way again. And then so he's flying around and he sees another bird sitting on another tree. And he flies down next to that bird and he goes, "Hi, I'm Bob." And then the bird screams in his face again. And he just punches him in the face again. And Bob's all like, "What's going on? This is weird." But he's really confused, and so he flies off again though, and he tries again. He sees another bird sitting in a different tree, and he goes and he sits down next to this bird, and he goes, "Hi, I'm Bob." And then he just gets screamed at and punched again, and like this happens 6 or 7 more times, and Bob's getting really confused and he doesn't know what's going on, and then so he decides, thinking that maybe birds just don't like the name Bob. So he sees a different bird sitting in a different tree, and he goes and sits down next to this bird, right? And he says to this bird, "Hi, my name's Fred." And then the bird screams in his face and just punches him again. And Bob's really confused by this point, and then he looks down and realises he doesn't have any pants on.
A little bit of comedy there, here on Left, Right and Centre. It's 10 to 1, which means it's time for...
Can I say I'm the returning champion of game show? Of course, my last appearance on the show, I was the victor.
And I'm sure you'll be the victor tonight.
Well, lost hope before it's even begun. I don't know why I've done that.
Today we're playing a little game called Name That Nut. I'm going to give you a series of each of you a couple of Who Am I questions.
Ooh, about nuts.
All you have to do is name the nut. The earlier you get it, the more points you get. But if you... So I'll give you a series of clues.
Uh-huh.
You can guess whenever you like. If you get it incorrect, though, no points.
Could I ask, is this food nut or crazy person nut? Can it be either?
Mateo, I'm going to start with you.
You haven't answered my...
I don't answer. I'm the rule maker here.
You're the decider. Okay.
I was born on... This is your first clue. So the earlier you get it, the more points you get. Up to 6 points per question.
Mm.
But if you guess, that's it. You can either get zero or whatever you're on.
I understand.
For 6 points, I was born on 10th of July, 1935, in Perth.
Right.
I'm well known for causing controversy.
Right.
I entered federal parliament in October 1980.
Is it one Wilson Tucky?
It is. I'll get my sound effect. Because I really like it.
Yeah. How many points is that?
That means you get, get 4 points. Four.
Yeah.
4 points.
Beat Couldn't that, quite do my eye. Tim.
Tim. Your first clue for 6 points. I was born in 1940. I'm a notorious criminal mobster. For 4 points, I'm often regarded as an intelligent psychopath. For 3 points, I'm often called the Harlequin of Hate.
Charles Manson? No.
No.
I'll read you the other two clues. I've appeared on lists of the greatest villains of all time. My last name starts with J. The answer was the Joker.
That's actually what I was going to say.
Mateo, I was born in 1989 in Adelaide. My hobbies include arguing incorrect points of view and being a bit of a jerk.
Oh. Wait, is this...
For 5 points?
Left, right and centre panellist. Argumentative. Dull. A bit irritating. It's Tim, isn't it? Yes.
Tim, you're our third nut of the night. 5 points for that question. Tim, your final question. So, Tim, you're on 9 points. Tim, you need more than three more than the maximum to win this game. Your question is, for 6 points, I was born in 1828 in Eastern Australia. For 5 points, I've been described as having a hard outer shell, but friends regard me as not hard to, quote-unquote, crack. For 4 points, I've been known by many names. Anything?
Nope. Nothing.
For 3 points, I never married. For 2 points, I've taken part in drug stings. Anything?
Nope.
For 1 point, commercially, I'm regarded as a success. Nothing at all? Would you like to know the answer? Well, first of all, I'm going to play the wrong down because I just don't like you. It's not personal. Well, it is personal. The correct answer was macadamia.
Hmm. And I like how clearly biased game show has become.
That's not clearly biased.
Like, overly progression. Like I'm happy to be the undisputed winner of tonight's game show. And don't get me wrong, it's utterly deserved. But
I don't think this was not a biased game.
Like, maybe I think you have it in for Tim a little bit. I mean, but he's been defeated long ago.
I don't quite understand what you're talking about.
Well, anyway, I've won again, so I'm quite happy about that, really.
I randomised the questions.
Uh-huh.
What is that? Is that a jab at me? Is that a jab at me for the week where I randomised the questions? I got crap from you about it. Oh, Timmy randomised questions. That was a crap game show. That was a fair game show. There were 6 questions. Everybody in the limited is there are infinite number of game shows. Everybody would get the same difficulty questions. As it turned out, they did anyway. There was a good tiebreaker question. That was a fair game show. The only fair game show that has been run this year has been the one I run, okay?
You ran.
Ran. Past tense.
Now we see his true colors come out.
Yeah, Tim just purging all of his acrimony.
This isn't even the surface. You haven't even scratched the surface of my acrimony.
So is it...
Right, you're boring.
Is it an injustice, Tim?
Student Radio at O-Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
Tim just yelled at me about one of the clues I gave him. I've taken part in drug stings. Yeah, macadamia is often used in drug stings. They chop it up and it resembles the colour of cocaine. So that's where that came from.
Okay.
He's not very good at this game.
Well, I don't think that's in doubt, but he's also saying that, you know, it's not being run very fairly for him.
Anyway. Oh, I dispute that.
I know you do.
We're coming towards
you. Jerk.
Tim, please.
Please,
not on air. Civility, please.
Shut up, Mateo. It's all right for you. It's all right for you when you get to all the benefits of
it. Didn't even put up a good fight. 9 points to zero.
Well, as far as I could see it tonight, Tim, it was 9 points to zero. So it seems pretty sweeping, really.
I got a fictional character and some. I was born in what, 1830 in Eastern Australia?
I got you.
How is that a macadamia? From the moment he said the year of my birth was 1989.
I don't know
from
what
the
year
moment he
in.
Said that, you knew who
no,
it
I
was.
I don't know what year you were
from
born
the moment
in.
He said that.
How do I know that? Anyway, we're coming towards the end of another fun-filled show. We urge you to either check us out on the Facebook group, Left, Right and Centre, with the Oxford Common Hour. Or check out our blog and the blog of all the other student radio programs.
Yeah, and I just want to say we've been getting a lot of comments that people have been writing to us or talking to us saying, you know, who gives a fuck about an Oxford comma? The answer is we give a fuck about an Oxford comma, or we wouldn't have changed the name of the group to include an Oxford comma.
And actually sent emails to people saying to that effect. But yeah, at studentradio.wordpress.com, that's the URL of where you want to check out all the blogs. We will actually be updating ours. This week, with a picture of the lurid depiction of the romping citruses.
I believe, yeah, the romping citruses. Make sure you're near a car park when you do view the blog.
Because you may want to sit down.
May want to sit down.
Yeah, may want to have it on the laptop.
We're gonna. It's Live Music Fest. We're going to wrap up with another Live Music Fest.
Yeah.
With another live song. If you
Absolutely.
Keep tuning into Radio Adelaide during the rest of the week, particularly on The Range this Thursday at 4 p.m., because you'll be able to hear a South African choir performing
and,
live.
And also Casey.
And also Casey. That's kind of what he was getting at.
If you want to inflate his already, cumbersome ego.
He is turning into a little bit of, a megalomaniacal figure. Okay.
Casey has real difficulty walking around the studios, like getting his head in and out of doors. It's that large.
The doors are very small.
He has to turn sideways.
We're a community radio station. We can't afford big doors. All right, we're going to go out on a lovely song from Radiohead, True Love Waits.
I'll see you next week, guys.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Sweet dreams.